some years ago, I was sitting a three-month retreat, and it was pretty far into the retreat, maybe a couple of months. And it was during the fall months, so it was getting colder during the retreat. And having a hot shower every day was pleasant, the pleasant water element. And there was one day where I was taking my hot shower, and I don't know what happened, but the water went cold in the middle. And it happened that my mind was settled enough at that point on the retreat that my response, rather than some shouted expletive, was just to say unpleasant. That was what my mind came up with in that moment. But we have this sensitive body, right? And in our practice, we learn to feel and sense the changing experiences that are coming into the sense doors to this sensitive body, always changing. And we see how our mind reacts to the various things that come in. And we can also discover how the mind can find freedom in this changing flow. So much freer to just say unpleasant than to tense up or become angry, for example, if the water gets cold. So we're framing these afternoon sessions as a chance to explore certain elements. And we've been emphasizing the way the elements are aspects of experience. And one implication of that is that the elements also offer pathways of practice. You know, they're related to our experience, and so there can be a path opening in our experience to freedom. The elements and experiences we have can help to highlight where there is clinging or suffering, and also where there can be freedom. So today we'll be looking at the fire element, also called the heat element. I think it's fairly easy to connect with the fire element in the material realm, the physical experience of it. Fire is associated with warmth in the body and also with coolness. It's, you know, its relative absence in some location, and also with heat regulation, and also with the process of digestion and with aging. You know, these were seen in ancient India as related to burning. We use that phrase too, actually. Burning calories, for example. And maybe aging is like a slow cooking of our system so that it becomes wrinkled and softened in some way. So as we practice connecting with fire, I think we'll quickly see and sense how varied this element is throughout our system. You know, we might have an overall sense that we're, you know, hot right now, for example. But if you really scan through, we may notice that there's particular warmth in the core of the body that's often warm. And maybe the armpits are warm, but maybe our feet are feeling relatively cool, or the skin surface in general feels cooler. Sometimes the hands are very cold. Sometimes they're very hot. They're a very sensitive part of the body. And we can also see, if we're mindful as we're doing things, that we put a lot of effort into managing our heat and coolness. We put on our sweater. We take off our sweater. Should I wear socks to the Dharma talk? Or fiddling with the thermostat or the window? This is because humans are only comfortable in a relatively narrow set of temperatures. But nonetheless, in this, you know, just in this physical realm, there's potential for dukkha and attachment and craving. And also the wisdom of realizing that we don't have total control over the temperature and that our body is vulnerable in regard to temperature. The suttas explicitly say that heat and cold are experiences that we should patiently endure. So that is, you know, kind of the physical realm of the fire element as one of the four great elements. There's much to explore there. That alone can go very far. But beyond this, as we've done each day, we can interpret the elemental experience into the realm of the mind and the heart. There's an amazing man who's connected with the IMC scene, with this center, whose name is Jacques Verdun. And he is a longtime practitioner and something of a bodhisattva in the prison world. So his work for years, maybe for a couple of decades now, is that he has gone into prisons and helped inmates to work through some of their pain using mindfulness. Often mindfulness of the body. And he also helps former inmates reintegrate into society. And the name of one of his trainings is called Sitting in the Fire. So he supports people to be able to sit with mindfulness and directly experience dukkha, suffering or pain that comes up. But he teaches a compassionate practice whereby people can learn to be with difficulty in a caring way. And he even uses the phrase that it will be burned away, leaving ashes. But it's not just being a warrior and toughing it out, as, you know, inmates might be inclined to do. But he deliberately uses somewhat tough kind of language like that because it's appealing, this sitting in the fire. But he teaches very clearly that the only way to go through all the way to the ashes is to sit with a lot of kindness, even love. So there are maybe, just from this, we see two sides of fire. There is fire in the burning of the pain that happens in a human life. It's painful somewhat to be a human. And also there is the purification and the cleansing, which is held in the warmth of kindness, love, compassion. All of these together can produce transformation. So from this, we see kind of intuitively the range of ways that fire imagery can be used. So let's look now at, you know, more specifically at how fire images are used in the suttas, how the Buddha talked about fire. It's an interesting one when we look. It encompasses a wide range. So the ones that we just mentioned about sitting in the fire and even some other ones. So as we go through some of these images, you may want to feel into each one and sense into it a bit more experientially. Fire often stands for dukkha in the teachings. This word dukkha, which often translated as suffering, but also points, it literally means pain, but it also points towards something like unsatisfactoriness, stress, struggle, the way that we meet experience that is entangled in certain ways. The suttas, the discourses of the Buddha, clearly associate greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the three main difficulties of the mind, with fire. The third discourse that was spoken by the Buddha is called the Fire Sermon. That's the name that's come to be associated with it. And it says, rather boldly, "Monks, all is burning. What is the all that is burning? The eye is burning. Forms or visual objects are burning. Eye consciousness is burning. Eye contact is burning. And whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant nor painful, that too is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of greed, with the fire of hatred, with the fire of delusion." And the same for the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind. It's meant to be dramatic. Okay, it doesn't say that every experience is like this, but that it has this potential. The Buddha spoke this discourse to some ascetics who were worshiping fire, so the image would have been especially meaningful to them. But we can consider it in our own experience. You know, doesn't the grasping of greed and the resistance of hatred have kind of a burning quality to it? If you're sitting and you really want that donut. I haven't had a donut for 4 days. Burning. Dukkha can be quite visceral. You know, it can feel that it is consuming us in a certain way. We can be consumed by our desires and our hatreds. Even delusion can be seen as a fire, the delusion of confusion or of not seeing clearly, perhaps as a kind of a smoke screen that obscures our vision. Maybe it causes us to shut our eyes and turn away. Maybe we don't want to see. So delusion too is has fire images associated with it. And this word, this grasping that goes with the greed and the hatred is actually related to the word in Pali, the ancient Indian language used in the suttas. It's related to the word for fuel, the fuel for a fire, upadana. So grasping and fuel, so it has this sense of a repeated cycle. The grasping itself is painful, and it is fuel for further clinging and craving. It feeds on itself, if it's not seen. That's the key. It feeds on itself, particularly if it's not seen, if it's habitual. But if we see clearly the grasping that's going on, it can be different. One time I was with a friend, someone whom I love dearly, and with whom I sometimes disagree, but a friend, and they said something that at that moment irritated me, in fact, maybe angered me. And it happened also that my mindfulness was fairly strong at that moment. And I felt this flash of heat, really, and burning running through my body. I really understood at that moment what the term flash of anger means, but I didn't grasp it. And it was amazing to me that it erupted and ceased almost instantly. And it's just like, it just burned itself out. I was reminded of that material that's called flash paper, used by magicians. It's a special kind of paper that burns completely when you light it. The reaction that goes on produces only gases, so it doesn't leave any ash. It can happen when we're very mindful. So fire is not always such a positive image, this greed, hatred, and delusion. There are also cases in the suttas where it talks more specifically about strong sensual desire, being likened to going against the wind with a grass torch. Can you imagine this, right? You're carrying a grass torch and whoosh, it's blowing back into us. So this is, you know, maybe related to the trade-offs, the dangers that there are in pursuing sensual pleasures. You know, we like cake, but we know it has a lot of sugar and fat and cholesterol. It has pleasures, but it has dangers. So there's often this sense of danger. We see the dangerous side of fire. It harms us. We can get hot and bothered. And it can get out of control. Another aspect of fire. The inmates know very well that strong feelings can get out of control with big consequences. And we may know these things experientially too, in terms of that we're talking about with this sitting in the fire here on retreat. We may have been enduring some painful memories or some regrets or longings. We don't know what's going to come or how, but it's common on retreat to experience these things. There's some sitting with them. Nothing unusual about that. But this fire imagery is also used in different ways in the suttas, quite different ways. We can remember that the Buddha advised his son Rahula to meditate like fire. Another part of that same sutta says, people burn clean and dirty things in fire, including excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood. And the fire is not repelled, humiliated, or disgusted because of that. Fire can take it. So here, the burning of the fire is the purifying, the cleansing. And when we sit in the fire, we may be offering our clarity and our understanding to the difficult experiences that are coming up. Our heart or our mind is the fire, allowing these things to be transformed into what is sometimes hard-won wisdom. And fire can also melt things. The warmth of metta melts our ill will, melts the many barriers that we have created between ourselves and other people, between different parts of ourselves, between our body and the external world. These barriers can be melted as the heart opens in practice and the fire element, the warmth, spreads through the system and out. Ying talked about how element practice naturally leads toward the heart practices of love, compassion, appreciation, equanimity. So the fire element has these different dimensions, sometimes dangerous, greed, hatred, and delusion, sometimes helpful, like the strength and the energy that can purify and transform, a bit like literal fire, right? So useful for light, for heat. And yet it needs to be used in a directed way. handled carefully. So to me, fire represents aspects of practice where we need clear discernment to use them well. Suppose we feel heat arising in the body. What kind of heat is that? Is it the flush of pride, or is it compassion? Mindfulness will help us know that. And by sensing in the body, if we feel open, if our heart feels warm, or do we feel ease or tension? We need to know ourselves in order to use the fire of our existence in a way that furthers the path. So fire's an interesting one. And then finally, because fire represents the dukkha that inflames the heart, its extinguishing represents the peace that's possible by walking the Buddha's path, nibbana, the final fruit of practice. And tonight at the 9 o'clock sit, we'll do a short ritual around this extinguishment. We began the talk by mentioning the fire of greed, the fire of hatred, and the fire of delusion. And there's a lovely exchange in the suttas between the Buddha and a wandering spiritual practitioner named Vachagota. Vachagota had a lot of speculative views. And he liked to come and kind of philosophize with the Buddha. So the Buddha says to him during one of these exchanges, "What do you think, Vacha? Suppose a fire were burning before you. Would you know this fire is burning before me?" "I would, Master Gotama." That's the Buddha. "And if someone were to ask you, Vacha, what does this fire burning before you burn in dependence on? Being asked thus, what would you answer?" "I would answer, this fire burns in dependence on fuel of grass and sticks." "And if that fire before you were to be extinguished, would you know this fire before me has been extinguished?" "I would, Master Gotama." "Aha, so if someone were to ask you, Vacha, when that fire before you was extinguished, to which direction did it go? To the east, the west, the north, or the south? Being asked thus, what would you answer?" "That does not apply, Master Gotama. The fire burned in dependence on its fuel of grass and sticks. When that is used up, if it does not get any more fuel, being without fuel, it is reckoned as extinguished." And the Buddha goes on to say that so too in him, in the Buddha, all the fuel has been extinguished. There's not only nothing burning, but there's nothing to burn. An awakened one is simply out. Didn't go in any direction. There's not much more to say. The Buddha also commented, "This Dhamma is profound, hard to see and hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle, to be experienced by the wise." To be experienced. So freedom is to be known in our heart. It's not abstract. It's to be sensed, intuited by some kind of knowing other than thought. And like Vacha, Vachagota, we will know when the fire that is burning has gone out. Let's sit together for a moment.